That's by Willie Johnson. If I had my way, I'd tear that building down. That's in reference to the Parliament. I want them, every single one of them, to resign and apologize.
That's the demand. All of you resign.
It would work.
Everyone who stood up and applauded, resign.
Absolutely. Luckily, happily, we have reached Alice Sabimana. She is the author of After All Was Lost. And the subtitle is a great subtitle, The Resilience of a Rwandan Family Orphaned on April 6, 1994, when the Rwandan president's plane was shot down. Of course, she was assisted in the book by her family, and the book was translated into English by Maurice Sabimana, a good friend of myself and others who worked on this issue. Alice, are you there?
I'm there, thank you. Hello, Phil.
My apologies for keeping you up late.
No problem.
This book, first of all, I just want to say I'm so glad that your family, and particularly you, worked so hard to see that it made print, because it isn't just a story of a resilient family or a tragic story of the assassination of your father on April 6, 1994, but it gives so much evidence that I would say the world needs to know about, of how the tragedy happened and how it actually, I suppose you could say, is unfolding for Rwanda, but it's a triumphal story for your family. And I guess, first of all, what I got from the book that was so helpful was that you were able to tell us who your father, General Deogratius Sabimana, who he was, who your mother was, or is, I should say. Mm-hmm. And this is not the image of a Rwandan general or his family that the world has sort of been led to believe. Talk a little bit about what kind of man was your father, and how were you raised, and what did you think was going to happen in your life in those years leading up to the invasion in 1990 and then the tragic death in 1994? What was life like?
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Phil. So first of all, of course, thank you for having me today. So of course, for me, my father was just a father. It's only when I was, of course, a teenager that I realized that he was a man of state, because he was a general, he was the chief of army. And the image that I have of my father is someone who has, who was strict, but in a good sense. He taught us how to be disciplined, how to love people, how to make no difference between, all the people that were coming at home, so including Hutu, Tutsis, all nationalities. And of course, it's only later when I became an adult that I was also interested in the history of Rwanda. That from hearing what dad was, from the family, from what he was saying to us concerning the war, I knew that he was a man of peace, because he keeps saying that peace is cheaper than war, and his willingness really was to retire and have a peaceful life. And talking about the invasion of 1990 by the RPF, the Rwandan Patriotic Army, coming from Uganda, I was only 13, but so at that time, he had to leave home. He went at the front, at the military, because he had to fight there. So we were living during 2 years without him. He was only coming back like once a month, or every 3 months. And when he came, I remember is and Maurice confirmed it, that it was really hard for him. And he was saying that this war is nonsense because it's really about Rwandan fighting against Rwanda. Mm-hmm. Rwandan, and he played a major role during the peace negotiation because the army of the RPF was supposed to integrate the national army. So he really did. What I can say from him is he was a man of peace, and he mm-hmm. wanted peace for his
yes,
country. Yes.
And he wasn't only, I'm really glad that you, this book makes clear, he wasn't only an army officer. He had had diplomatic experience. He had been an attaché. Actually, yes. You were with him one day when he went to visit Colonel Gaddafi when he was mm-hmm. working as an attaché in Libya.
In Libya, in Tripoli, exactly.
And he instructed you in how you're to behave and not to eat all the cakes.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I was only, I think, 6 or 7 years old, and I was alone with him. And the only thing that he told me is that we were going to see someone very important, and he said that, of course, I didn't have to ask for anything. I just have to wait for our host, yes, serving us. But I don't remember the content of the conversation, but I remember that he said it was Colonel Gaddafi.
Your part was to be a little girl, and your father was to be a diplomat.
Exactly. But you, I'm talking about... Sorry, go on.
No, actually, I found it just a charming moment in the book. I thought that was great, that they were very nice to you, and they did indicate that it was okay if you took some of the cakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, because you asked me also about my mom. So my mom in Rwanda, she was like every Rwandese woman. She was supporting my father. When my father was away, like at the military front, my mom was the one ensuring the logistic. We tend to say that she was the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Mm-hmm. It's only when I became myself a mother that I understood the sacrifice that she made as a mom, becoming widow only at 43 and having to raise alone 6 kids after that. And we were 6, and we also have some cousins that were living home. And she made a lot of sacrifice. She started from scratch, building again, trying to build a new life for us, and of course she had to focus on the primary needs, being how are we going to survive, how are we going to eat, how are we going to have papers, how are we going to go to school. Really, that was her main priorities, and she was not prepared for that because she had to leave also her country. So she's an amazing mom. And
yeah, no, that comes across so vividly, and I really congratulate you, by the way, on the way you weave the stories. Our listeners should know this book, its title, After All Was Lost, the author is Alice Sabimana, The Resilience of a Rwandan Family. You actually identify your grandma, your grandfathers on both your maternal and paternal side, but you also talk of your brothers and sisters, and each of them has a voice. And a personality, and I think that's hard to do, and I congratulate you. I thought that you captured it. I mean, I like the details. One of you was a track star, or was good at the shot put. Was it you?
I
thought to myself, my goodness, I didn't expect to be reading that somebody was... I hadn't seen the word shot put since I left high school, but... you were really... You had a basic, ordinary, I would say, happy existence in a family very well run by your mother and father, and in which there was no... You didn't talk about ethnicity. In the book, you say, and this is shocking to people who think they know what happened in Rwanda, that in your family, there wasn't any notions about Tutsi, Hutu. You had to ask your father.
Yes. I asked my father. The first time I asked my father, it was after school. I was at primary school when the teacher... was asking children to raise hands if they hear the ethnic Hutu Tutsi, and I was just raising my arm at every ethnic she was asking, and at the end she was really like, "But what's your name?" I said, "Sabimana." I said, "Okay, I know where to put you." And then I went home and I asked my father, "But am I Hutu or Tutsi or Twa?" And the first question was, "But do you see any difference between you?" I said, "Of course no." I mean, and he said, "I will explain you later, but the most important for you to know is that there is no difference. You are all the same. You all have the same culture. You all speak the same language. And it's only after in the 90s that after the invasion of RPF, that again this question came back to my mind, and I asked again, what's the difference between us? Why are people fighting?" And he said, "You know, in French, it's l'ennemi de l'homme est l'homme. So the enemy of the man is the man."
Yeah.
It's saying that your enemy can be, "I'm Hutu." And he said, "Your enemy can be a Hutu of your village, and your best friend can be a Tutsi." So yes. Don't never define a man by his ethnicity, nationality, color. Really, you just have to see what's inside a person before going yes, the ethnic is not important. Of course, it's good to know where we come from because it's a question of identity.
Sure, family history, of course.
Of course, of course. And we are proud to be who we are, but we don't define any people. So this is a lesson that we learned very early from our father and mother. And that have followed. And even today, because I'm a mediator, maybe we'll come to this. This is something that I tell to the young generation. So we need to know who we are. Mm-hmm. And once we know, that's enough. This is a part of our history. Even if we have not good history in Rwanda, even if the past is not so glorious, we can make a better future together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so striking, and I have to tell you, and I know you know this, but there are PhDs and people who publish books and who are interviewed regularly as authorities on Rwanda, and what you just described, it's entirely different from they speak authoritatively, saying that you must have been an indoctrinated person, an indoctrinated people with hatred, and in fact... Well, you've already told us what your father's opinions were, and let's remember, he's the commander of the Rwandan army. And it's just so striking to put this on the record, what his views were, because we're speaking of someone who was martyred, in my opinion, assassinated. And people have said, spoken ill of him and his colleagues who don't know anything about them. You know, and your book at least gives us finally a window or a picture of one of the leading figures in modern Rwanda. And I want to say, I think it's very helpful that you have, this book includes notes from your father, taken from, you know, that were rescued at the time of the conflagration that began on April 6th. Thank heaven you, your family held on to those notes. We also have what he is himself writing, mm-hmm. and to be examined. Let people see what he was saying, because he was participating in a peace process. And I found that again. I know that after the trouble was over, there were a lot of investigations, and people were dragging notes out and letters out. Well, these are notes, these are opinions that are now on the public record and should be looked at.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and for us it was really important to publish and not to hide anything because I am a parent, so I don't think I can give any lessons in private to my children and then I go outside to give other opinions. Mm-hmm. So it was really important to see so people can see by themselves, because these were notes that he were taking after meetings, so these notes were not supposed to be public. It's really, it's giving his opinion, as you mentioned, and he's also writing, because sometimes, yes, we hear that he was an extremist. But I must say, Phil, that when I read Rwandans or, I mean, media, I'm happy about the image of my father. Mm-hmm. Because he's really known to be, he was respected by many Rwandans, even his enemies.
Yes.
And even his enemies know that he wanted peace.
He was also he's a very able officer.
Exactly.
When we speak of the assassination and the loss of the president, I know that there were military people who said the loss of General Sabimana guaranteed the victory of the RPF. So, mm-hmm. you know, what were they thinking when they shot down that plane? That would be part of it. Of course, the world tells us it's a great mystery. But you
and
also...
And maybe I can go further, if you don't mind, because this is something that we heard in the press, that maybe if he was not dead, we could have avoided so many killings in Rwanda. And I firmly believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also written in his notes that the priority was to protect the population, including Tutsi. It's really written from his hands. So.
Yes. You recount two very important points in my mind. Your father said, I believe to you directly, that he was worried about whether peace was going to be possible because they are negotiating, and on the paper they say we're going to agree. But in private conversations, he was troubled by what he was hearing. And he was, according to the Arusha agreement, the RPF officer was to be his deputy. That would be Paul Kagame, who's currently the leader of Rwanda. And he told your father that he was going to replace your father.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes, it was. So one time he came back home, it was during lunchtime, you know, in Rwanda we were coming back home to eat. And he told my mom, by the way, I saw Mr. Kagame, mm-hmm. and he salutes you, and he said that he will replace me. And then about what you just mentioned, it's something that I read. It's something that I heard from his colleagues, including Marshall, who were saying that so maybe the willingness of peace was not shared by all the parties.
Yes.
But of course, I mean, I was only 16, so this is not something he was. Mm-hmm. discussing with me, of course. You can imagine what we're discussing. Yes. strategy or military.
I think one of the reasons people need to read this book, Alice Sabimana, After All Was Lost, is that we have to realize that part of the problem addressed by your father was that he was speaking to Colonel Luc Marchal, who was one of the key officers of UNAMIR, and saying, you know, they are stacking weapons on the Ugandan border, and the trouble is coming. And Luc Marchal said he was right. But I have to say, I like Luc Marchal. I've had him on the show. But why didn't you blow the whistle? Why didn't you say, wait a minute, you can't be stacking weapons on the Ugandan border if we're going to have a peace agreement? Rwanda was failed by people in whom your father had to put some trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my indictment.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, so sad.
If you you read my book, huh? It was introduced by Mr. Sweeney, who was the ambassador. So, I can speak, about him, because I went to see him personally. And as I mentioned in the book, he didn't have, he said that they were not very, I don't want to use the word kind to the old, to the Rwandan government of 1994, so before 1994. And he said they were maybe even too rude. And they didn't believe that something.
Yes.
I mean that the war that the war will take this.
You know, your father was saying there is, we're seeing signs of fire and smoke. There's going to be, you know, and others. He was doing his job. He died doing his job. One, I have to say, as we wind up here, I thank you for telling the story, but it has had to be one of the toughest things to write. You actually visited the site of the crash of the plane, and you had to look at the bodies. That's it's a morbid point, but I tell you, I cried when I read it, because to be in such a situation with, and then your only next step from being the commander's daughter, you find yourself having to escape narrowly with your life.
And that was
difficult to write, was it not?
It was difficult to write, and even now I can. I'm shaking every time I think about this, because you were asking how, before the 6th of April, I saw myself like every little girl and a teenager. So my life was traced.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I was going to end my studies, maybe go to Europe, come back, marry to a Rwandan, and then continue my life there.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't believe it could be before and after. So just saying goodbye to my father this 6th of April in the morning, I mean, hearing his voice and him leaving home and preparing for dinner and leaving his space empty. He was supposed to come back and eat, and this crush, and then going and just see the bodies like this, and I mean, they were not even bodies, so it was awful. It was really, I cannot wish this even to my enemies, really. You cannot describe it.
Well, I'm so glad you told it, and I have a very highest regard for your father, and of course for your mother, who suddenly found herself with a tremendous responsibility, which she carried off marvelously. I respect the book, and I'm glad you wrote it, and thank you very, very much for talking to us.
Mm-hmm. And maybe if I can add, it's my story that I'm sharing, but Phil, I can tell you that I have many, many returns from Rwanda, Hutu and Tutsi, who say thank you, because we found ourselves in your stories. And really, this book, it's not only about our private story. It's not only about our healing. It's a collective memory for all the Rwandans. So we wrote it not only for our family, but really for the Rwandans and who will recognize themselves in our history. And also we make the parallel for other people, I mean, who face war. Now we are talking about Russia, we are talking about Ukraine. I have colleagues from many countries. So when it comes to war, I think we are all the same. So we are all the same, and the fear is universal, if I can say like this.
Well, thanks again. After all was lost, it's Baraka Books. The author is Alice Samimana. Thank you again.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Taylor Report. We got about a minute to go, I think, and that was sobering. I do recommend the book. Of course, I have met the mother on one or two occasions, and Maurice Sabimana has been a guest on the show.
And for the local audience, the book is available at the Toronto Public Library, and you can also buy the book.
Oh, there you go.
From Baraka Books.
It's Baraka Books.
Yeah.
And they do the best. Yeah.